Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take your sources, cut through all the noise, and really zero in on the insights that can, you know, fundamentally shift how you see things.
And today, we're really taking aim at a big one, one of the most sacred cows in corporate strategy and product design.
The demographic persona.
Exactly. It's this tool that, like, everyone just accepts. You create this user profile, like, Ravi, 36, mid-level manager, urban, married.
Owns an iPhone. Yeah, we've all seen them.
Right. But the source material we're looking at today makes this just a devastating case that relying on these shallow assumptions for things like lead scoring or automation isn't just a bit off. It's fundamentally broken.
That's it. So our mission for this deep dive is to prove out this idea that people don't behave like demographics.
No, they don't. They behave like people under pressure.
And that's the core contradiction we have to unpack. And, you know, the sources give us the perfect proof right out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. It's what we've been calling the Ozzie and Charles test.
The Ozzie and Charles test. I love it.
So imagine you're building a system, a lead scoring system, maybe. And it's designed to find a high-value prospect, but it only uses demographic data.
Okay.
So you get this profile. Male, born in 1948, raised in the UK, married twice, lives in a castle, and he's wealthy and famous.
Right. So if that is all your system knows, it's going to score them identically.
Exactly. But that description, it applies equally to Prince Charles and to Ozzy Osbourne.
Two wildly different humans. I mean,
completely different humans with totally different motivations, fears, needs. And if your system scores them the same, it might try to sell them the same thing with the same message. It just completely misses the human intent.
Right, which is the whole point. If your system misses intent, it's useless. So let's unpack that. If we all agree that in that extreme example, demographics are basically irrelevant, why do corporate teams keep insisting on them? Why do these shallow assumptions pop up everywhere in product strategy and, you know, especially in lead scoring?
Well, the sources are pretty blunt about this. It comes down to what they call the corporate comfort blanket.
A comfort blanket.
Yeah. Demographic personas, they stick around because they are incredibly easy to create.
Mm.
They're easy to defend to your boss, and they're really easy to present in a, you know, a beautiful slide deck. They make your strategy feel scientific.
So it's about avoiding the hard work.
It lets teams avoid the complex, messy work of understanding what actually drives people. The pain, the fear, the accountability. The things that actually make someone buy something or use a new tool.
So teams are basically trading actionable insight for, what, bureaucratic ease? You feel safe because you've got the Ravi 36 slide, but that profile, it literally cannot answer the questions that matter.
It can't. A demographic score won't tell you. What mistake would get Ravi into actual trouble this quarter?
Right.
Why would he delay a big decision? Or when will he actually trust in automation versus when will he override it out of fear? Those answers have absolutely nothing to do with his age or his iPhone.
Okay, but I have to push back a little here. I mean, if I'm selling, say, heavy machinery, I have to know they work in manufacturing, right? Isn't some demographic data essential just to draw a line?
That is a crucial distinction, and it's a great point. We're not saying demographics are useless for segmentation.
For knowing where to look.
Exactly, for knowing where to fish. What we're saying is they're irrelevant for scoring intent. For knowing which fish is hungry right now.
Yeah.
You need the job function to narrow the field, of course, but you need to understand the pressure and the consequence to know if they're actually ready to buy.
That makes perfect sense. Job title gets them in the door. Motivation tells you how to treat them. And this is where it's really important today. AI doesn't fix this.
No. AI and automation, they just scale the irrelevance.
They just do the wrong thing faster.
Absolutely. If your underlying lead score is based on a flimsy demographic assumption, training an AI on it just creates a system that becomes, and I love this phrase from the source, confidently irrelevant.
Confidently irrelevant. That's fantastic. So what does that look like in practice for, you know, for you listening?
Okay, imagine your lead scoring AI. It finds 2,000 people who look like Ravi. Same title, company size, location. So because the system is optimizing for similarity, it gives them all a high score.
And then pushes them all into the same generic sales sequence.
The exact same one.
Mm-hmm.
The outreach, the feature recommendations. It's all so general that 90% of those people just ignore it. You end up spamming a high-value customer with the same message as an intern just because their titles kind of overlap.
So the output is just noise. It's features going unused, automations being immediately turned off, insights being ignored because the system never understood the human problem to begin with.
Right. People don't wake up thinking, I am a 36-year-old professional.
No, they wake up thinking, I have to fix this broken report or I am going to miss my target.
And we need to design systems for that moment, for the stress and the accountability. That is the critical shift. We have to move from who they are to what is at stake. Good software doesn't care about your salary. It cares about what's broken and what kind of urgent relief you need.
Okay, so if demographics are just noise, what's the signal? What did the sources propose as a better model, one built around reality for people who are under pressure and, you know, don't get a second chance if the system fails them?
So we pivot to what they call the AI persona framework.
Mm.
It models users not as these static profiles, mm-hmm. but as problem holders with consequences. And there are five elements that make up a score that's actually actionable.
This is where the good stuff is. So let's start with the fuel, the real engine of motivation here, the pain persona.
The pain persona answers one question. What is the recurring, tangible problem that makes this person dread Monday morning?
And we're talking about real friction, rework, delays, broken handoffs.
The frustration of having to manually check inconsistent data for the 10th time.
I think we need to ground that. It's not just, oh, the system is slow. It's the system is slow, which means I can't finish the financial report until 9 p.m. every single month. And that's wrecking my home life. That's pain.
That's the pain. And the source material is really clear on this. If there is no recurring, tangible pain, the system should do nothing.
Nothing at all.
No alerts, no sales calls, no noise. A high demographic score for someone who is perfectly happy is meaningless. The pain persona tells you if there's even a problem worth solving.
So if the pain persona is the why solve it, then the next element, the fear persona, that's the why solve it now. What's this one about?
This one goes straight to the consequences, the stuff that demographic scoring just completely ignores. The fear persona asks, what failure would actually damage this person's credibility, their job security?
Give us some examples of that corporate fear.
It could be missing a critical target in a very public way. Losing the trust of stakeholders because you bet on the wrong tech.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, just taking the blame for a system failure on your watch that you know is avoidable.
And that urgency, that fear of personal damage, that's a much stronger signal for a buying window than a job title.
Infinitely stronger. And the application for lead scoring is immediate. If you identify a high fear persona, you don't just send a generic email. You prioritize them for an actual human conversation. Because their window of opportunity might be closing fast.
So the fear persona dictates whether you should optimize for speed or for protection.
Exactly. If their fear is making a public mistake, they want safety nets, checklists, approval steps, visibility. If their fear is being too slow, they want aggressive, AI-first automation. You can't design for both at once without knowing their specific fear.
Which leads right into the third element, the control persona.
Mm.
This is about risk tolerance, isn't it? How much someone is willing to give up to an automated system.
Yes. And it addresses this deep human truth that two people in the exact same role, two 36-year-old managers, can have completely different comfort levels with risk and control.
So you have the low-control user on one end. They're happy with the defaults. They let the AI do its thing. They just want the result.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other end, you have the high control user. They demand visibility. They need manual approval steps for everything important. They're always in the settings tweaking things.
Like someone who just lets Spotify play whatever versus someone who spends hours building the perfect playlist and adjusting the equalizer.
That's a perfect analogy. And that translates directly to business systems. If you design one experience for both of them based on a demographic score, you're guaranteed to fail. You'll frustrate the high control person and you'll worry the low control person. You've defaulted to designing for an average that doesn't exist.
Average is useless. Okay, next up, the fourth element, the decision persona. This sounds like it brings in some real-world corporate complexity that most models just miss.
Oh, it does. Most lead scoring tools, they treat every user as an equal. But reality isn't flat. It's structured around accountability.
Accountability is everything. If something goes wrong, someone gets the blame.
A truly effective system has to know the difference between three roles. Mm-hmm. First, who decides the project happens, the budget owner. Second, who executes the work day-to-day, the user. And third, and this is the most important one, who absorbs the blame when it all goes wrong.
And those are often three different people. The person who gets the blame is usually the one who resists change the hardest, regardless of their age or title. It's all about mitigating the personal consequence of failure.
And if your lead scoring model doesn't see that chain of consequence, if it scores the budget holder as hot, but ignores the fear of the person doing the work, your project will stall. The feature will go unused, even if the check was signed.
Which brings us to the end, the fifth and final one, the outcome persona. If you solve the pain and you navigate the fear, what does this work actually look like?
The sources insist it has to be tangible. It has to be personal. It is not charts. It is not dashboards. And it's definitely not buzzwords like digital transformation.
So give us the tangible metrics. What does real relief feel like?
It's specific personal results. Time saved. So you can actually leave the office at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
A measurable drop in customer escalations that land on your desk. More predictability in your work, so you can actually plan a vacation. Things that tangibly improve that person's work life.
So if the system can't measure success in those real consequence-driven terms, it shouldn't be claiming success at all. This whole framework, it forces everyone, product teams, sales teams, to focus on that inconvenient truth.
Mm.
You have to model fear and accountability because that's what drives the behavior.
And the cost of getting it wrong is just huge. Your old demographic score tells you Ravi is a hot lead, but you don't know his pain or his fear. So the sales pitch is generic. Your high score leads to a confidently irrelevant conversation, which is so much worse than no conversation at all.
So connecting this all back, it's really about usefulness versus just, you know, corporate comfort. Designing for demographic noise gives you these average outcomes, average systems that are easy to defend in a meeting, but are useless in the real world.
But designing for pressure, for the consequence, the fear, the accountability, that creates useful systems, systems that people actually adopt and trust.
And the reality is that two people with nothing in common on paper, the prince and the rock star, they could be solving the exact same business problem, driven by the exact same fear of failure.
That fear. That is the signal.
And this knowledge is so vital for you, the learner, because it helps you see immediately when a strategy is based on superficial comfort versus real, actionable human motivation. Are you building a slide deck that's easy to defend, or are you building something that actually alleviates genuine pain?
Always look for what's broken, what's at stake, and how quickly that relief is needed. Everything else, as the research shows, is just demographic noise.
Which leaves us with one final provocative thought for you to think about today. Where else in your life or your work are you defaulting to that surface-level demographic noise age title location instead of digging deeper to find the pressure and the consequence that truly explain why people do what they do?
Find the pressure, and you find the motive. Until next time, keep digging deeper. We've torn up the corporate comfort blanket for you.